This is a podcast from Minute Media.
What's up, Panther fans? Welcome to another podcast of the Four Man Rush. Tonight we got myself, Will, we got Country Kev, Big Smooth, and special guest, Mike Wall. So welcome. Tonight we're going to talk a little about the Super Bowl yesterday, so let's get started. The Rams defeat the Cincinnati Bengals 23-20, competitive game throughout. Mike, we'll just start with you. What's your overall thoughts of the game, and what did you see?
It was entertaining. It was a competitive game. You know, I think because of some of the injuries on the Rams side in particular, it turned into maybe a more competitive game. But, you know, at some point last week, the narrative became all about, is that offensive line of the Bengals actually going to be able to hold up, or is Aaron Donald going to be that kryptonite to the Joe Burrow Superman? And at the end of the day, Aaron Donald's the best player in the NFL right now, and he showed why last night. I love to see, you know, as an offensive line guy or as a trench guy, I just love to see the battle go in there and the attention that it got, and just understand how important it is that be rock solid up front on both sides of the ball. So I think that was a win for the big guys.
Right. I mean, saw the game start out. The Bengals force a punt. Defense makes a good stop. Go for it on fourth down and one very early in the game, and they get stuffed. And what's your think of that call? Would you rather pin them deep or be aggressive there?
The call looked great, man. If you watch that replay – there were some guys wide open. He just had his heart set on throwing to Jamar Chase, right? He had the swing pass, and he had the receiver out on the sideline, wide open. He kind of had his mindset. But to be fair, Von Miller crept inside already early in the game. Crept inside on that right tackle, man. I think it's Prince. I felt bad for that right side of that offensive line. They had a rough go of it.
Yeah, it's smooth. I know you're big on the trenches. What you think of the Bengals' offensive line issue yesterday?
Well, I just want to say Von Miller gave me some nightmares, man, from when we played him in the Super Bowl. Seemed a lot of the same things going on. You know, that inside stunt that he made definitely made a difference. And, you know, you just brought it up, Mike, but Prince has been a liability all year long. And it's just – I don't think this was a rocket science type of thing for you to figure out. You know, the strength of the Rams was the defensive line. The weakness was the Bengals' offensive line. Even though you had a close game, it just goes back to our original principle. Everything starts and finishes in the trenches. So I think the Rams run that battle, and that's made a difference in the game. I do want to give a shout-out to Raheem Morris. That's another thing to add to your resume. He got you another Super Bowl. His first one was as a D-back coach for the Bucks, but he just got one as a D.C., I mean, there's nothing else to really be said. I hope he gets the head coaching opportunity that he's looking for now. I watched a really good game where it just came down to the trenches. We don't get to see that a lot, where even the casual fans can look at the trenches and understand that, you know what, this is how you win Super Bowls. It wasn't so much about quarterback play. It really came down to, can you beat the man in front of you? And we got to see that this past Sunday.
To me, it was a tale of two halves. I mean, I thought the Bengals did an okay job protecting Burrow in the first half. They had two, three bodies on Aaron Donald at all times, but the adjustments the Rams were able to make in the second half to create those one-on-one matchups for Aaron Donald, it just kind of took off. What you see there, Mike, from the first half to the second half, how the Rams were able to improve that pass rush?
Yeah, so, I mean, there's a couple things, right? I think the Bengals probably lulled themselves to sleep a little bit with a false sense of security because Joe Burrow was getting rid of the ball so fast. But the difference in the game, if you sit there and watch this, I know we had to sit through Collinsworth and NBC, but he kept talking about overloads, right? And here's the deal. If you're running an overload on me as an offensive lineman, I'm thrilled to bits because the hardest thing in the world that you can do is put Aaron Donald in front of me and give him an inside and an outside go, right? But if you bring a guy in the A gap, the B gap, and the C gap, I know you guys are going to end up in one of them. So I feel like I'm actually much more comfortable with it being stacked like that because you really don't have very many places you can hide. Plus, we can bring that offside guard over and turn it into a slide protection. What the Rams ended up doing, and the difference in the game, it happened late in the second quarter. I think his name is Hunt, number 50 for the Rams. He took on Mixon, and Mixon was not – that he could not hold up. He couldn't hold his water. They got a pressure on Joe Burrow. So the next time in the same situation, they went scat protection. And I think it's Hunt. Is it right? Is the name right? Hunt, number 50 for the Rams, the linebacker. Yeah. So Hunt blitzed. So they slid to Donald on the right side. He blitzed the B gap on the left side. That's when Donald got his first sack, chasing him out because they pressured Burrow again. They tried mixing one more time, and he tried to cut out Hunt in the A-gap. He did barely broke stride, and they got another sack pressure, okay? So what happened, the difference in the game in the second half was they all of a sudden had a real issue because you couldn't slide the center to Donald every time. They either did it with a five-man line running that big 3-4, that 5-2, however you want to look at it, and then they just drop a guy into coverage, so they're only rushing four, keeping their principles clean. Or they would walk 50 up and make that right guard or that left guard just hold there for 1 second. Because when you've got Von Miller and you've got Aaron Donald 1v1 versus subpar linemen, all you need is that half step, that half second, and all of a sudden you can't get that slide over in time and you got real issues. And right. To me, that was the difference in the game. That was Raheem Morris saying, like, I understand that what's going on now. We don't think that Mixon had a great game on the run, but he could not hold up in pass pro. And all of a sudden it turned out like the lineman's now the line or Burrow has to deal with that Hunt, that uncovered linebacker. And all of a sudden you got real problems.
Right. Kev, what do you see from the Bengals O-line? Because, you know, you look back at how this team was built. I mean, you go back to 2015, they've drafted 12 offensive linemen. Of those 12 picks, five of them were first and second round picks. They signed Riley Reiff during the offseason as a free agent to be their right tackle. He gets injured. So when people say they haven't invested in the offensive line, it seems like they have. You think it's a scouting issue? Is it a coaching issue? What do you see, Kev?
For me, I just see poor technique, you know, particularly in the interior offensive line, you know, when watching this game, because, you know, the idea that at first they were kind of neutralizing Donald with having a center to help out with the double teams to buy enough time, that showed me pretty much, okay, this is what they're going to do. So, you know, you play chess, not checkers. So when the Rams made their adjustment and finally was able to expose and get that isolation one-on-one matchups, then, you know, it just pretty much reverted back to what we had seen all year. The team that allowed their quarterback to be sacked more than anyone else in the league. I think it was a Super Bowl record for sacks last night. I think it was 8 mm-hmm. on Joe Burrow, which was a Super Bowl record. I was like, wow, because I thought it was, you know, when the Bucs did it last year against Mahomes, I thought that was a record at first, but they clearly exceeded that one. Just with the Bengals, you know, they got Chase. I'm glad they got Chase, but their whole offseason should be built on tearing down and rebuilding that line from start. Like, no position should be a guarantee at all. It should be open tryouts. I don't know how many draft picks they got, what their salary cap situation looked like, but they need to do what Kansas City did and just retool their whole entire offensive line.
Mike, this has been an issue with Cincinnati since Burrow's rookie year. I mean, they drafted Jonah Williams first round, Billy Price first round, and they have $60 million in cap space that's unused. I mean, should they just go the veteran route and try to get some plug-and-play guys that can start right away?
Yes, that's a good question. And here's what I see, and here's what kind of, like, bothers me from a development standpoint. When you watch, we talked about this before, guys, like if you want to judge whether or not a team is well coached, then look at their double teams and their pass off in their games. And I saw multiple times where these guys would like double team Aaron Donald, another three technique, and they'd both come off of the linebacker and leave the guy in the hole. In the Super Bowl, this is like week 23, I think. They're still making those mistakes. They can't pass off basic games. Their communication's poor. Right? They're not IDing the right backers. And so for me, like, we see this in other teams. Young guys can play in this league, right? I mean, you go look at your Green Bay Packers, man. They were starting like 4 new starters this year for most of the year. Like, you can do it, right? And you have a guy, and you're going to give up sacks because you have a younger quarterback, and sometimes he gets fixed in and all this stuff. Like, you're not going to lead the league in, like, you're not going to lead the league the other way in the least amount of sacks allowed. But you could be respectable, and they're not really respectable. And so for me, I always look at it this way, man. The bandwidth and talent in the NFL is such that I can go find 5 guys that can play football if I really put my time into developing them. And one thing that's really frustrating is you look at, like, this is kind of a blanket statement for around the league and like how we all kind of do business, right? If you don't shine a light on your issues during the season and you don't fundamentally change how you're developing those guys, whether it's like, maybe we got to change practice, maybe we got to take more individual time and more group time. Maybe we got to watch. There's something that has to change in order to get these guys better. And you made it all the way to the Super Bowl with your quarterback getting smacked in the face, you know, 51 times in the regular season, 12 or 13 more times in the postseason. And it's like, you're surprised this happened? Or you're going to act like it didn't matter? And so for me, it's like, you can go hire whoever you want, but there's not, I'll just tell you right now, there's not five all pros that can overcome a lack of development that are on the free agent market. So regardless, if you want to draft them, you want to bring in guys, whatever you want to do, you're going to have to find a way to change your mindset as an organization and start developing talent, man, because that what they're doing just clearly isn't working.
Right. What's your thoughts? I know you talked about a little, and you're familiar with Jonah Williams and Billy Price. Well, Billy Price isn't on the roster anymore. I guess he just couldn't stay healthy. But of those guys I named, only Jonah Stevens still starting for them right now.
Well, I'm leaning towards what Mike has been saying. So you can go ahead and draft whoever you want to. You could.
Okay. So.
And, oh, go ahead. You can draft whoever you want to. You can sign whoever you want to, but if you don't develop the guys right, it's not going to really matter. So I think the concern going into the offseason should be more about who do I have developing these guys? What kind of coaching staff do I have around these guys? Because, well, you brought it up. They drafted over 10 different guys since 2015. Out of that bunch, you can find five good football players. It's about developing guys. And what Kevin pointed out earlier is there's just fundamentally flaws. We talked about this a couple of weeks ago. I brought up the fact that the communication is off. Guys aren't picking up the right blitzes and stuff like that. All of that stuff is addressed in the film room. It's not so much addressed in the draft or in free agency. We just got to get better in the film room. So I hope they go ahead and get a coach that can kind of upgrade that area of it. You know, help guys watch film better, help guys have better stances, help guys communicate better with each other. And that'll be the way to fix that Bengals offensive line.
Now, you look at the Bengals drive, the touchdown drive in the first half. Joe Mixon had 5 carries, 26 yards. Then they connect on the halfback pass for a touchdown. The rest of the game, he has 10 carries for the entire game. Now, Mike, you had mentioned they probably had to take him out of the game on third down for pass protection issues. But why do you think they weren't able to get him involved other than that one drive?
Well, usually the part of the way they were running their offense, like in the last couple of weeks, was run the ball on first down, right? And then they'd get 2nd and 7, 2nd and 6, whatever. And then they'd start getting into their drop back or their shotgun passing game. And I think, you know, early on in this game, you saw when the Rams came into that 3-4, that 5-2, again, however you want to look at it, but they had basically 5 big guys in there and they weren't able to run the ball. They were trying to shut it down. And they didn't really try to capitalize that on that with the play action pass until the first pass of the second half for a touchdown on that questionable no call versus Ramsey. But you know, the thing about Mixon is he's the kind of kid that can make something out of nothing. And I think he did that. He did a pretty good job of that. But if you kind of watch the game, there's probably only 2 of those plays where he's got clean holes. I mean, the Rams defensive line and the linebackers are beating up the offensive line of the Bengals. They're not really creating push. You know, there's just a couple things here and there that are happening. But when you get into this habit of like, all right, we're going to run on first down, then we're going to go shotgun 2nd and 3rd, you know, it's so, like, for me, it's always, where are the screen game? Where's the quick screens? Where's all the stuff to get out of the ball out of the hand a little bit faster? How do we get the quarterback off his spot so he's not in the same spot every time? It's like, you got to use all of this stuff, right, to kind of help your quarterback out of your offensive line out. And that's where I think with experience, you know, Zach and that crew will probably be a little better next time they come around.
Right. On the other side, I mean, even though they lost, I thought the Bengals' defensive line and linebackers played an excellent game as well. I mean, they were playing 2 high safeties, so you had 1 less guy in the box. They were still able to shut down the Rams' run attack. I mean, the Rams just couldn't get a consistent run game going all 4 quarters. What did you see from the Bengals that made them so effective?
Man, I don't know about you guys, but I thought Hubbard played like a damn all-pro. Okay. He looked amazing. You know, Higbee being out for the Rams hurt them. You know, the Rams offensive line, you kind of – ever since they lost Stafford – is it Stafford? Stafford for and went to Tennessee?
Stafford, yeah.
Roger Stafford. He's a hell of a good player, and they just miss that kind of player, like that dynamic, downhill running, aggressive athlete. they just kind of look like they're all playing tummy sticks, kind of just waddle into every position. They just don't look very physical. There's not a wave coming off the ball. Backside the tight ends and the right tackle were struggling against Hubbard. And I mean, the Bengals just played on their side of the line of scrimmage for most of the game. I thought, you know, I didn't think either of these lines was going to do well, but we weren't really talking about the Rams and how really they had the propensity to get beat in the run game because they just don't really come off the ball very hard.
Right.
I know, Kev, we were always big on DJ Reader, Bengals defensive tackle. I thought he played a pretty good game as well. What'd you see from that Bengals D line yesterday?
Yeah, I mean, that Bengals D-line, you know, they brought their lunch pail and their gloves and they went to work. They were determined not to not be the reason why they were not going to win the game. It was just incredible just watching how they just, you know, just played good fundamental technique. I saw a lot of low pads from the defense line, particularly Reader. I mean, he had three quarterback hits, tackle for loss, you know, Henderson, I mean, all them guys, they just pretty much were determined to not to try to make the Rams one-dimensional. And when you look at the stat line, they did. I mean, the Rams didn't even average 2 yards a carry last night. But I got to give credit to the play calling of the Rams by sticking with it and not turning it into where Stafford's dropping back, you know, 40, 45 times. You know, so a lot of times with the run game, and Mike, you can attest to this, it's not always got to be about piling up the yardage. It's about setting the tone, and it's about giving a certain look. So because, you know, so many play actions are based off of what they see in the run game. So I got to give credit to the Rams that even though they didn't yield a lot of the results that they felt like they needed, but not turning Stafford into a one-dimensional pass-heavy type of performance, I think that was huge on their part. But hats out to the Bengals D linemen. They for me, they got an A from me for the way they played. Yeah, they had like they had like nine. I see here they had a total of 9 tackle for losses. The Rams had 8. So both D lines continually played behind the line of scrimmage all night.
Yeah, I think when you look at the back end, I thought they had Cooper Kupp pretty much contained early in the game. They threw a lot of too high safety looks, tried to keep everything in front of them. Second half, that kind of changed them. Mike, did you notice something the Rams were doing to get Cooper Kupp more one-on-one opportunities and get him more open?
Nah, I don't think he got more one-on-one opportunities. He probably got less because OBJ got hurt, right? It's just right. I think at some point in the game, Stafford was like, all right, we're going to go win this thing. And who's the best player on the field? I'm just going to throw it to him. Especially after I forgot the guy's name. The guy came in for so that they get the long touchdown, kick the ball off, and then whoever that was hit the dig route, got one hand on the ball and turned it over immediately. I think after that, Stafford was like, you could see that whole team was kind of down when OBJ went down, if rightfully so. Man, he was killing it. Like he was primed to have a big game, right. And it was very, very unfortunate to hear that he busted that ACL again. But
yeah,
I just feel like there's times in the game, and this is where, you know, regardless of how you feel about Matthew Stafford and Detroit and all that, his history, you got to give that guy credit, man, because that team was down. That you could see the frustration and the anxiety on Sean McVay's face on the sidelines. You could see the body language on the sidelines. And, dude, Matthew Stafford and Cooper Kupp, and I'm not talking about their defense, right? The defense is a whole different thing, right? Aaron Donald's his own guy, and Von Miller's his own guy, right? But on offense, they were down, and Matthew Stafford was like, you know what, I'm going to go win this game right now. And Cooper Kupp, I'm just going to throw you the ball until they prove that I don't care if you're double-teamed. I don't care what's going on. You're open. You're always open because I'm that good. And he's got that kind of like – he's got that arm strength confidence that just some people can't have, you know. He's just got that confidence. Like, I can fit it into any window, so you just go ahead and give me a shot. And he did it, man. Congratulations to that guy.
Yeah, that pass on the game-winning drive where he's looking at the stick route – and throwing to Cooper Kupp coming across the middle, and that's probably one of the best passes I've ever seen, throwing a no-look pass like that. Smooth, what do you think of Stafford's performance? I know he was in play for VR quarterback this year, declines the Panthers, goes wins the Super Bowl in L.A.
I'm just usually surprised at the reviews I get about Stafford. It's like he's one of those guys, you either love him or you hate him. When I look at his resume, I have to respect it, you know. I don't think people really understand what it is when you say, I played in Detroit. we watched it hold a lot of careers back. Barry Sanders, Calvin Johnson. So, like, I don't really want to – it's hard to just look at his whole resume and just say, oh, he's this because of what he did in Detroit. I'm thankful he got the opportunity to go play for a real football team. Not saying that the Lions aren't. But in this game particularly, you brought it up. That no-look pass. That no-look pass, man. To do that in a prime game, the biggest game of the year, that just shows you got ice with that. You got ice cubes in your veins, bro. That was a big throw. He drove his team down the field and made a throw. I wanted to talk a little bit more about what you were asking about the Bengals. I think the unsung hero was Jesse Bates. We scouted him heavily. He made plays not just in this game, but he's been making plays all year long, and he doesn't get spoken about enough. So that's even more credit for Stafford. Like, you had a really good secondary you were going against, and you found a way to make plays when it mattered. Wasn't the MVP, but like Mike said, man, you got to give that guy credit. I think that kind of solidifies his Hall of Fame statement because he's always been putting up big numbers. He went and got him one. What else can we argue about?
It seemed to me with Cincinnati in the first half, they got in trouble playing the single high cover one looks. And that's when they had that slot fade to Odell Beckham on the touchdown. So the Rams were able to find their matchups when the Bengals went that route. Then in the second half, I guess in the red zone, you really don't much have much of an opportunity. They were able to identify Eli Apple, who I don't know why they left him on an island with Cooper Kupp with the game on the line. I mean, that was a complete mismatch. And, you know, he's getting his on Twitter. So, you know, it's, they just gave them the opportunities and were able to capitalize. On the flip side, look at the Bengals game-winning drive. Mike, what do you think of their third and fourth down play call? And they go with P. Ryan instead of Mixon on third and one. And then on fourth down, they try to throw the ball and not try to run it again.
Are you talking about to end the game?
Yeah, to end the last two plays of the game.
Like we could, you can go ahead and talk about the decisions to not have Mixon in, and like they're all valid, but this is one of those where I just go, you just got to see what greatness looks like, because Aaron Donald pinned back the right guard with one arm and reached around him and grabbed the running back with his left hand and basically just like, you're not going anywhere, little boy, and just fell backwards and denied him on that third and one. That was actually the more impressive play. And then he had that one-on-one versus, I think his name's Quentin Spain, who was talking a little bit of trash, I think, last week after the last game. And, man, I'm not even sure. Like, he almost blew his back out. He missed him so bad. And, listen, that's 2 weeks in a row where that dude comes in and ends the game with his arms around the other opposing team's quarterback. Like, it's just amazing how good he is. You know, I don't second guess. If you have Mixon in third and one, you know, listen, it wasn't really about Mixon, right? It was about the fact that they couldn't get movement. Right. And the thing that probably is the most perplexing thing, if you want to talk about decisions, is why would you run it with the two fan blocks on the backside with the right guard, right tackle? Like, why would you put Donald in the hole? I know he's dangerous backside too, but I think he pressed that guy's chest in, like, you know, into the backfield. The first time they tried that on the first fourth and one, that's how they got blown up the first time, right? The first time they would try the short yardage play. So it's like, why are you going back to that? Like, go back to another. Don't go back to that play. That doesn't make any sense. And you got to throw it on fourth and one. You got the, you know, the best player on your team is Joe Burrow, but it's, again, we talk about hindsight stuff. Like, maybe you get him off the spot a little bit. Maybe you run a sweet pass or something like that, trying to keep the flood routes, trying to keep him on the move, because it's just Aaron Donald, man. You just knew when they got him back on the field, like, that game was a wrap.
Right. And I just think you saw just so much more creativity on the short yardage on the Rams side when they realized they couldn't run it on third and one. What did they do? McVay calls that jet sweep to Cooper Kupp, get away from that Bengals defensive line, get him on the perimeter, make a good block on the outside, and they're able to pick up that first down and extend the drive. So just didn't kind of see that creativity from the Bengals, who have weapons and players that can do that. You know, where were those plays like that with Ja'Marr Chase? Kev, you have any thoughts on that final drive?
Yeah, I was just thoroughly impressed with the bag that Sean McVay went in to get them in position for the game-winning drive. It's like I said, you could tell the ones that make adjustments to adjustments, and the ones that determine, we got to do it this way because this is what we practice all week. And it just seems like that the Rams adjusted and the Bengals did not. I think a lot of times we can just get some coaches can get complacent with their strategy. You mentioned before, Will, you and Big Smooth both, like how certain coaches have egos about themselves. Like they, you know, on the biggest stage, oh, I got to make this about me versus doing what is fundamentally and logically sound for this particular down and distance. But hats off, man. The fact that Cooper Kupp knew that all eyes going to be him and he still was able to put up. I know he didn't have the big gaudy numbers that he did, but everything he touched was clutch. And
except for that throw to Stafford.
the Philly special 2.0. I guess that's I don't know what they're going to call it, but
he missed Stafford by a mile.
Yeah, he had a running start and threw it off 1 foot. I knew it was going to sail on them. Now, how much they practiced that, who knows? But that was definitely something else. But while I had a chance here, Mike, I want to ask you because I know you played on it here. We was talking about OBJ and going down. Like, I've been seeing a lot online, particularly on Twitter. It seemed like the players are trying to get some sort of sign a petition, like to do away with the turf monster. Yeah. What's your thoughts on, you know, seeing, you know, playing on turf and how it affects guys' careers, teams, and things of that nature?
Well, there's a couple different things that are going on there with the turf that's I think pertinent to this. when turf first came out, I remember we were up in Detroit and they were the first people to have the new quote unquote sport turf. Like they got rid of AstroTurf, they put sport turf in, and all these guys in suits were walking around the field patting each other on the back for putting this stuff in. And you know, me and Mike Flanagan were out there screwing around. Like, you know, we used to have a tobacco and just go hang out before the game. These guys came over and tell us what a great deal it is and everything, right? And then there were 7 lower body extremity injuries that game. So from the jump, it's been problematic. And they've done a great job at the NFL of kind of, you know, doing some cleat tests and understanding, okay, what kind of cleats you should have on that field because of the rotational force, blah, blah, blah. But here's where it really is the problem. Turf is harder on your muscles. In other words, it fatigues the muscles faster than the grass does. It's just a different kind of surface. The absorption and everything is different. So, like, when you ask, like, the speed guys, do they want to be outside hot in the summertime or do they want to be on the turf? They'll be outside hot every time because it just physically hurts them to be on that turf over and over. And the reason is just it fatigues you. And so what do we know about – what do we know about muscles? When they fatigue, they don't fire at the rate that they're supposed to. Their firing rate changes. And that's how people get hurt, right? Bottom line. And sometimes I think it's easier for the NFL not to connect those dots because financially it makes more sense to have turf. It's easier to change out. It's easier to keep nice, etc. But, yeah, I wish they'd get rid of it altogether, to be honest, because playing on grass is just so much easier on your joints. Everybody's used to it. And you can have fast grass. You can have old Green Bay Packers 3-inch grass. You can do whatever you want with it, right, to give your team a competitive advantage. But I would love to see them go back to grass. I know it's not necessarily feasible in some of these places, but I'd love to see it.
Right. They want to have their concerts.
That's it too, right? Like, yeah it's tough to do some of that stuff. And they think about it in terms of what, you know, when they build a stadium, they're not thinking about the NFL. Those games are already booked, right? They're thinking about what other – can I get the rodeo in here? How many concerts can I get in every month? Like, they're thinking about all that other stuff, and they want to do whatever is most kind of financially feasible for them to be able to pack that stadium as often as possible.
Yeah, in our case, it's because we got a brand-new soccer team that's getting ready to start. So that's why we made the change to turf this past year after all these years of
– But soccer guys, there's nobody that hates turf more than soccer players. I'll just tell you right now, there's nobody that hates it more. So you think football players hate turf? Soccer players hate it even more. But it's, again, they just don't want – because what do they have to do? They have to – the only option these days is to grow it on a field next door and move it in like they do down in, like they used to do down in Houston. I think they do that one other place now too where they can literally roll it in on a pallet underneath. And it's an expensive – that's what they do it over in Tottenham. That's where they do it. They do it for the new Tottenham Stadium. But it's a very, very expensive ordeal. You got to have a separate, you know, you need real estate and all this kind of stuff. It's just a lot to ask. But, you know, for the player's health, it'd be a lot better to be on that grass.
And you just see all these new stadiums, full service venues. It's, I think at this stage, how feasible is it to have all these teams have to replace their surface with natural grass? It's the Rams have kind of a roof open so they can maybe get away with it. But teams like the Cardinals with their new stadium, I don't know how feasible it would be there. So
what they do with Houston, what they used to do at least, and remember, it's one of those retractable roof places, so it's not always open. But they grow the grass right next door on like a slider, and it just literally slides underneath. Hmm. And it's real grass. And then when they want to grow, you know, put it back out in the sun, they just go put it back out in the sun. Yeah, there's always problems, right? But it's doable. Like, anything's doable given the fact these guys are all billionaires. It's just how much they want to do it.
You know what's crazy? I went to football camp at Rutgers back in like 2005, and they had just got the field turf. It helped my 40 time a whole lot. So straight line athleticism is great for that. Yeah. But I did witness a couple of guys have ACL tears just in a football camp. So I'm not a fan of it at all. I've heard stories about the rubber inside causing cancer and stuff like that. I'm just not a big fan of it, man. I just wish we didn't make that transition, but hopefully somebody can get together and get it out of here. I know it makes the game more exciting because guys are moving faster, but it's just not a good look for player safety, in my opinion.
Yeah, it's interesting. After the concussion movie comes out, the NFL tries to do this campaign overall about player safety. They're going to eliminate hits to the head, all these things, yet they're still allowing these turf fields, which are hard on players' legs. They're encouraging to hit low. So you got guys going low and knocking guys' knees out. Receivers aren't protected. I mean, quarterbacks, I guess, are protected low, but you're a wide receiver in the open field catching a ball. The DB can come take your legs out. And I think that's how Robert Woods got hurt this year. So it's like they just don't have the same emphasis on lower leg injuries with these players.
No.
So as we wrap up today, I want to talk about a couple of legacies. First, Aaron Donald. You mentioned he was going to retire. I mean, incredible career. 7 All-Pros, 8 Pro Bowls. Is he the greatest defensive player of all time, Mike? Does he have a case?
Oh, yeah. He definitely has a case. Now, Lawrence Taylor would be the only person that even comes to mind that might be on the same level. But for the generation that I'm kind of involved with, I would say Aaron Donald, the best player that I've ever seen play. He is the most physically, because it's so much harder to do what he does than to play outside linebacker, defensive end. Because he's getting doubled every single play. He's going against guys. And he's if you put him in a lineup with all like the best D tackles in the league, and you knew you didn't know anything about football, you'd be like, I'm not going to pick the 6'1 guy. He's only 285 pounds. But he's also the strongest, the fastest, best leverage, most speed, best hands, best feet, and work ethic, football intelligence. Dude's like, he looks like a damn cartoon character. He's so muscle bound. And I've just never seen a guy who, you know, I think I told you guys the story where Steve Smith would be like, I'm looking at the safety. And you'd be like, why aren't you looking at Rondae Barber? He's like, because Rondae Barber doesn't exist in my world. And like, I feel like Aaron Donald feels that way about guards. Like, he's kind of looking at the guy who's got to beat after he beats this guy. Like, he's that good. And as good as, like, even John Randall was, I don't remember him being that good. This guy's just – he's next level.
You're absolutely right.
Like, 6'2",
285, I think. Yeah, 6'1", 284.
Mike, John Randall was a great comparison.
Yeah, John, he's like John Randall to me. He's like John Randall 2.0.
And, yeah. And,
you know, they have, like, a little bit different styles. John would beat you on his first move. He'd get back in front of you on his second, and he'd beat you again with the third, and end up getting sacked on the third move. He was that kind of guy. Yeah. Whereas Donald has – I mean, the game is so more efficient now, just the way that they think about pass rush and everything. It's a little bit simplified. But he's so precise with his hands and his feet, and they're so well tied together that, I mean, when he beats guys now, it's like he shouldn't be able to beat guys that bad. And I don't, you know, they're just like out loud, you go, why would I, if I'm 6'5", 320 pounds, why would I allow a 6 foot, 285 pound guy anywhere near my body? Like, why would I do that? Why would I keep him completely extended? but he does it every game. So you're like, maybe, you know, we're watching on TV going, man, I must be missing something, because they just, he just keeps doing the same stuff. And it, he's an absolute killer, man. If he's done, I feel lucky that I got to watch him. He's that good. I'll go get my popcorn. I'll watch him whenever he's on.
Since we since we're talking about guys being dumb, Mike, what you think about Andrew Whitworth, 40 years old, playing in the Super Bowl at a high level?
Yeah, that was nuts, man. I mean, I never imagined playing until 40. And I mean, when Witt came in the game, he was he's a massive human. Like he's one of those dudes who's just kind of next level big. Always moved pretty well. He used to play guard with the Bengals actually before he played tackle. And what's been crazy is, you know, he's lost a step probably. And, you know, we were kind of talking about, he's maybe not the most physical player in the world, but for the size he is, his durability, like most guys at that age, his joints are breaking down and whatnot. And he just seems to play with a level head. He's got that huge, you know, football intelligence. He kind of knows how to cheat the game a little bit and, you know, picking up little half seconds here and there. But it's incredibly impressive, man. Like I literally, when I was 40 years old, to even think, even if I was completely healthy, no shoulders, no nothing, to think about playing ball and against guys at this level, it's incredibly impressive, man. I'll give you one that to kind of compare it to. Bruce Matthews. You guys remember the name Bruce Matthews? Okay, so
absolutely.
Bruce Matthews was an all-time player. But I would say, honestly, he was playing with Tennessee probably the last 5 years he was playing. He shouldn't have been playing. Like, he didn't deserve to be in the game. They would, like, start him to keep the starting streak going. Then, like, somebody else would come in, like, after the first series. Yeah. And Whitworth is out there balling. Like, he's playing well. He's out there playing football. He's got some things he can work on, but he's playing well at that age, man. It's super impressive.
Right. I remember 2017, a free agency season, the Panthers had a choice between a younger Matt Khalil and Andrew Whitworth was also a free agent. So, I guess they figured Whitworth was at the tail end of his career and – man, we're gonna go help them with the younger Matt.
Ryan must have had a say in that, huh?
Absolutely.
Yeah, probably. Most likely.
Right. Hey, you wanna know what's the funny part, Mike? They said this was a down year for Aaron Donald. Let me give you what these down year stats look like here.
Yeah, right.
84 total tackles, 38 solo, 19 tackles for losses, 25 quarterback hits. This was Aaron Donald in 2021. Along with 12 and a half sacks. That was a down year for him. Do you know what us Panthers fans would give if Derrick Brown would do half of that this year? I mean, that lets you know how, the stratosphere this guy been playing on for this to have been a down year for Aaron Donald. That's insane.
Guys, yesterday during the game, there was a point in the game, and granted, the Cincinnati Bengals are – these guys are all professionals, but they're not very good, right? There was a point in the game where the entire defense for Cincinnati was over here on the left side and Aaron Donald was on the right. And the center was like, I don't care. I'll let everybody come beat us. Aaron Donald's not going to beat us. And he gets that just about every single game, every single play, no matter who they're playing against. Like, there's not a guy in the league that's like, oh, I'll take him one-on-one. No, I'll shut him down. Don't worry about it. Like, there's not a single guy in the league that feels that way about that man. So to have a year – it just speaks volumes. It's like Aaron Rodgers said, man, my off years are other people's career years. You know, he's just that kind of guy.
It's interesting. He's already mentioned saying the R word, talking about retirement, but I guess he now will be able to retire on top. Looks like he's really wants to be with his family. So we'll see what happens there. And I guess the last guy I want to talk about his legacy is Matthew Stafford. I mean, they're talking about Hall of Fame with his career with the Lions. Now he's a Super Bowl champion. He doesn't have any MVPs or all pros, but that's hard to do in Detroit. Mike, do you think Stafford will end up being a Hall of Famer with his body of work today?
Well, if he retired today, you know, it's really tough. Not because he's not deserving, but because he was in Detroit. And some of the, you know, the people who vote for this stuff, they're not, you know, it's not – football players aren't voting for the Hall of Fame, guys. It's some writer in Chicago who doesn't like Detroit, and, you know, it's different. So – I would say that he probably has to put together a couple more good years in LA just to make sure. But you would think with his resume, with, you know, some of the success he had with Calvin Johnson and then having the Super Bowl championship and having Cooper Kupp going for the Triple Crown, like, you're associating yourself with some in pretty rare company. So, you know, if I had a vote, he'd be in.
Okay. Okay, well, there you have it. We're 45 minutes in. Kev, before we sign off for the day, you got anything you want to say to everybody?
No, I just want to thank everybody for their continued support of the Four-Man Rush, especially with these episodes with Mike. We begin a lot of feedback, comments, things like that. So, Mike, I personally want to say thank you for reaching out to do this collaboration with us during these playoffs. Definitely, hopefully, we can continue and do something later on down the season. I don't know, maybe something post-draft or whatever. We definitely will. You're honorary Four-Man Rush, so you're welcome to come back.
I appreciate that.
Anytime you want. You know, we'll see if we can get you some Four-Man Rush pair to hang up behind.
I was going
to
say, back. I need some gear, man. I need some gear, and you guys are going to have to educate me on the draft because I'll be honest with you. Me and Amon were doing our podcast today and on my block podcast, and we were just sitting there going, man, like, we do not follow the draft. Like, we just, whoever – if you're playing, I'm interested. If you're in underwear running sprints, like, I just never cared. So I feel like I need some education, man, because I don't even know I know what to look at, but it's not the same thing that they're talking about. You know what I mean?
Right.
Right. Well, we actually got a couple of guys on our staff who are who play college ball and college coaches here who have been definitely schooling, you know, guys like myself on it. So that you definitely want to follow along. One is on Twitter, the Panthers Den. He's one. Okay. And was it Coach V Holmes? Is that the other one, Will, for Vince? Yep. Yeah. So we'll tag them on your Twitter. They are we're blessed to have them. So if you're looking to get a little draft one-on-one, we'll be glad to bring you in.
Better, it's better Mel Kiper. Anything but Mel Kiper, man. It's like anything but Collinsworth.
When he didn't retire after his Jimmy Clausen comment, I was done with him. You know, when he said, yeah. If Jimmy Clausen is not a Hall of Famer, I've been waiting ever since.
Jimmy, I forgot about that name. You guys haven't, though, I bet.
Hey, that's the draft pick that got us Cam, so hey, you know.
Yeah. That's true.
No,
what's going to happen with Cam this year? Is he coming back? Has he had any word?
They want him back, but I mean, I think it's just going to depend on contract situation as always. And he said he doesn't want to come back to a 5-12 team. So right. I guess they got to put a better roster together to convince him to stay.
Hopefully.
I hope he comes back, man. He means a lot to that team.
Too. Mike, with the season over, you want to tell everybody about what you got going on with Process to Perform and as we approach the offseason?
Yeah, we just the process of performance. So it's, you know, it's just a platform I use to help players, parents, and coaches try to reach elite, man. So we still running the Process to Perform podcast. That'll be coming out on Wednesday this week. Some Super Bowl reflections, some lessons from the NFL season. Trying to get a lot of interviews in with some professionals in different aspects of sport, whether that's performance psychology, strength conditioning, players, coaches, etc. And then always, people that are kind of willing to or people that are looking to. You know, get to that next level and are committed to their cause. Like we have a total athlete development platform and a coaching seminar now that I think is going to hopefully continue to help a lot of athletes and start to help a lot of coaches kind of get to their best. So really excited about the future here. And it's going to be a fun off season.
Okay, great. Well, again, appreciate you for joining us these past few weeks. Hope to have you on again later in the year as we approach the draft. Everybody else, thank you for tuning in tonight. We'll cut it off short at 45 minutes, so just tune in next week. We'll start to count on draft coverage.
Yeah, I just want to I want to let you guys know this weekend was really surreal for me. I intended to just be all in on football, all in on the Super Bowl, but I had to fly home to Jersey to bury one of my first teammates, Kyle Brummer. I just want to give him a shout-out. I want to give my class of 2006 a shout-out for the guys that came out and showed support to his family. He was my best friend, man, going through football. My first injury was with him doing angle pursuit. I hit him so hard I collapsed and separated my shoulder. That was one of the things that came to mind when I just thought about him. But he passed away last week. I went home, met up with a bunch of my classmates and old teammates, and we all got to come together and talk and just reminisce about some of our good memories. And it's relevant to this podcast because football is a great way to just express love. I just want y'all to know that, you know, if you got people that you care about, family, friends, teammates, etc., just try to let them know that you love them. And I just want y'all to know that number 77, Kyle Brummer, always in my heart, man. Love you to death, bro.
That's what's up.
Yeah, definitely. Sorry for your loss. Prayers to your family. I know prayers to Kevin's family as well. So hopefully everybody can, you know, appreciate people while you have them here, right?
Oh, most definitely. Most definitely.
Okay.
Absolutely, man. Keep pounding. Everybody out there, just keep pounding. Mike, you keep pounding. You're a Panther with us forever.
I appreciate that.
Yeah. Okay.
Hey, speaking of which, how about Sam Mills? One more thing. Congratulations to Sam Mills' family. Oh, yeah. I forgot to mention that. Like that, about time, right? That was a big deal, man. Time. I
know, on his last round, too. That's, I'm glad. Yeah.
That's all. It was good to see Sam Mills the third there representing him.
Dude, they're taking care of that defense too, huh? They got Seymour, Bryant Young.
Yep.
BY was a beast, bro. Right. BY was a, I mean, Seymour was an absolute legend. Like, those guys might not have those, you know, those sack stats, but I'm telling you right now, when Seymour was on the docket that year, you're like,
Yeah, it was great to hear Sam Mills and his impact on the locker room and basically built the entire culture of the Panthers. I mean, my first memory was in '96, I think, beating the Cowboys in the playoffs. He had the game-winning play that game, so definitely a long-term impact on both Panthers and the Saints. Part of that Dome Patrol, that was one of the best defensive units ever put together.
That's a fact, man. I appreciate y'all, man, for letting me on tonight, man. Definitely appreciate it. It's a rough weekend for me, man. It was good to come on here and laugh and talk with you guys, man, because I've been in a weird place these last few days, but I appreciate you.
Okay. Well, thank you, man. Again, thank you, Mike, for joining us tonight. Thank you, everybody, for tuning in. If you missed this podcast, you can catch it on YouTube, Spotify, and iTunes. Keep pounding. We'll see you guys in a week.